Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
welcome to Soul Tree Radio on the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, and as always, it is good to be in the house with you. Soul Tree Radio on the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right here, right now, at www.BASNewsroom.wordpress.com. Also, you can catch us at www.blackathletemedia.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network who will be chiming in soon, as I want to make sure we have as many people as possible here for the coronation. The coronation of Queen Dawn Staley. Dawn is the best coach in college basketball. I say best. Fuck male, fuck female, best, period. And we're going to spend a portion of this show explaining why. Of course, in the background, my compadre, as always, Gary Norris, great. What's up, G?
Let me make this perfectly clear. Let me make this perfectly clear, right? Dawn Staley won her third national title.
There you go.
I won, not two, but
together,
three.
Together, run it down.
Oh, yes. She went with an undefeated team. 38-0.
Yes, she did.
Also, by the way, folks, last 3 years, she's 109-3. Last 3 years.
Gary, you know how.
You
know how white supremacy likes to remind society at large that white superior and blacks inferior. We know this. We also
Michael,
know that.
I am sick and tired of Caitlin Clark. And this is why I was sick and tired of Caitlin Clark.
Why?
So listen, Caitlin Clark is a good player, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But Caitlin Clark has zero rings.
We know this.
Okay? People try to say the highest score in history. Wrong. People say the Air Force means somebody else. Wrong. See, when you do this, when you try to pull something like this, you better get the facts right.
Well, see, we know facts kill bullshit. Like 109-3, that's a pretty good fact. That's dominant with a capital D. We also know that, on top of everything else, she won a national title prior to this, and she's won a national title going undefeated. In other words, nobody beat her ass. Everybody she put in front of her, she whooped that ass. I got Eric Satterwhite and Tony McCain with me. Gentlemen, can you hear me?
You're fine. Do you want the numbers crunch?
Yes.
Yet, or you want me to hold off?
No, write it down.
Okay. Basically, what I did was this was. Dawn Staley's 24th season as a head coach. She is 8 years with Temple and 16 years down in South Carolina. Overall, she's 2 wins away from 800, by the way, 798.
Uh-huh.
She had 546 at South Carolina, 252 at Temple. Like you said, 3 titles, 4 Final Fours.
Yes.
She's only missed, in her 24 years, she's only missed the tournament 5 times. 13 years, in 13 of her 24 years, she's finished in the top 25, and of that, 10 were in the top 10. As you
there
previously
you
mentioned, the last 3 seasons, 109-3. Those are the last three seasons, and that includes the two championships and, of course, the undefeated season. Now, she's only had two campaigns. I'm sorry. She's only had two campaigns where she's finished under 500 in those 24
exactly.
years. Now, mm-hmm. basically, I took, like, the women's coaching, for lack of a better word, maybe not Mount Rushmore, but four of the winningest coaches in women's college basketball history. And I took basically their first 24 years, you know, just make it so that everything is even. Now, the only discrepancy, of course, is the COVID year. So we're gonna toss that out. But with a couple of these coaches, it's not that big of a factor. But
exactly.
Okay, Jody Conrad for Texas, all 24 years at Texas, 790 mm-hmm. wins, one title,
mm-hmm.
three Final Fours, only missed the tournament four times in her 24 years, all at UT. Now,
mm-hmm.
Tara Vanderveer, who just retired a couple days ago, her first 24 years, she was with Ohio State and
mm-hmm.
Stanford. Now, at Ohio State, in her 4 years at Stanford, I'm sorry, in her 4 years at Ohio State, she only missed the tournament once. In her years at Stanford, she only missed
mm-hmm.
the tournament four times. 601
mm-hmm.
wins in 24 years,
mm-hmm.
two titles, five Final Fours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Pat Summitt, her first 24 years. Her
She's
first 24 enough, years, no. 738 wins.
Yep.
Now,
there you go.
16 Final Fours, six titles.
Yep.
And she also had an undefeated. She also had an undefeated season.
Right.
And then finally,
King Gino.
Gino Auriemma, his first 24 years.
Three undefeated seasons, right?
He had the three. But
yeah, I think he had three undefeated seasons.
Yeah. 735 wins. He only
mm-hmm.
missed the tournament his first 3 years at UConn.
Uh-huh.
In that stretch. Seven titles, 11 Final Fours. Basically, I say all that in a nutshell. There's a very good possibility, going with age and what have you, that Dawn Staley is going to be the all-time winningest coach in all of college basketball when she's done.
And she gets good recruits year after year. She's going way past. She's going to blow past everybody.
Yeah,
I would say that's an inevitability, guys, because of two things. She jumped into the women's basketball game just as it got into its most competitive, most contentious, and quality-wise, best foray ever.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody now takes women's basketball seriously, even if you weren't betting on the game and saying, I bet $10 on the heifer. No. Now
and
women's basketball and, gets treated with respect.
And Mike, two other things. 830 win seasons for Coach Staley. And also, for the first time since the women have played under the NCAA auspices, their championship game drew the men's game. And again, you have to now. I don't want to say
NCAA
this as a
was stupid, but it paid game. What is wrong with that?
But see, the thing is, Gary, that works to their advantage because you have to remember you got to remember, both championship games were on cable this year. So
it was a noontime game, like a football Sunday
exactly
on the
mm-hmm.
West Coast, right? So you set
mm-hmm.
it up where you have your higher viewership. The NFL has mastered that for years with Sunday football.
Absolutely.
So
you give
it a noon time. They mimicked what happened with Colorado. Colorado had
right.
a lot of 9 a.m. games on the West Coast, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Because
it's like, you know, you get up and they're balling. And you still got the day ahead, and they had high ratings that way. So they followed that model because previous years, that Final Four game's at 8 o'clock and 5 Pacific,
exactly,
8 Eastern.
Yeah, exactly.
So they moved the time slot up to maximize the validity of it. So that was also the reason why the draw was more because Monday night, you know, Purdue, Connecticut doesn't move many crowds at all.
No. It was, you know, and plus the competitive phase of that game was pretty much over by the early minutes of the second half.
Yeah, no one was touching UConn. No one was touching UConn. That was an easy bet.
Yeah. I mean, even here, the ratings were high, but again, there's really nothing. I mean, with all due respect to the UFL and Major League Baseball, there's nothing really going on. There's nothing really going on.
That's right.
And like you said, Eric,
it's too
exactly.
early. It's too
it's
early.
Oh, especially baseball wise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the NBA and NHL aren't a factor because their regular season is basically.
Once you get to game 66 and 68 in the NBA, it's like, you know, who's going to play in the play-in game is the story, which is how whack the NBA
has become. Now, sadly, unfortunately, and me and Mike were talking about this, there's a whole black-white thing going on as well. Because you had folks that were just basically, it was, you know, put it this way, Sunday in many people's eyes was going to be a coronation, except in their eyes, the wrong person
was
got coronated. Yeah,
that's
in their eyes, but see, the real goat was coronated on Sunday,
I mean, Caitlin. Come on, we know the script. We've seen a PSYOPs a zillion and 12 times. You know, Caitlin Clark was nothing but the Trojan horse to generate the cash. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so that was her role. You know, a lot of phantom calls happened against UConn. A lot of phantom calls happened against LSU. And see, the difference with that when you played South Carolina, you know, when you coach a team that has many athletes, they go that deep. You just do what Dawn did. You just keep rotating player after player towards her. And because it was a close game with UConn, you knew she was going to be tapped out come South Carolina game. She had that good first quarter. Dawn didn't trip. It was kind of like the rope-a-dope, you know, let Foreman throw all the blows, let Caitlin get all her stuff early.
Exactly.
Get the lead. Rope-a-dope, you know. Don't burn no timeouts. And then start rotating your players, pounding a rock inside, and D'ing up. And the athletes won, the better players won. They were not beating South Carolina. We talked about this weeks ago when we were talking. Mm-hmm. They were not beating South Carolina. And we talked about that weeks ago where nothing was given to Dawn, right? It was all about hyping Clark. You know, they were mentioning the Mulkey stuff, right? You know, I like Mulkey. You know, I mean, she's been getting dissed and trashed all over the place, but a lot of that, she even had that guy from the L.A. Times apologize for writing such vitriol against her.
I'm glad you said that, Eric. The L.A. Times.
I did an article on that, too.
That wasn't the first time. The L.A. Times has been doing some dick dastardly shit.
Very dastardly. And Muttley, Mike. Remember, they brought Muttley, too. They brought Muttley with dick dastardly. Muttley, he was named Smutley. Smutley and Dick Dastardly. I'm sorry.
They dissed Angel Reese for being exceptional at what she did.
What do they call it? Bayou Bambi or Bimbo or something like that?
Her actual nickname is the Bayou Barbie, but of course they went like the Bayou,
Bimbo.
It was because they depicted it as America's Sweethearts, UCLA, taking on. The dirty debutantes. But remember, this is nothing new. This is Texas Southern. Even farther. Texas Southern beating Kentucky. Hoya paranoia.
Let me chime in real quick. No, it goes back to CCNY Kentucky with Adolph Rupp in 1951.
Yes.
It goes that far back.
CCNY
beat Rupp's boys. You know what I mean? We know the CCNY followed afterwards. Floyd Lane and them brothers, toppled Big Bad Kentucky, Little City College, New York. When Kentucky was rolling, it goes back to the racism back then, when the guard got the show in the NIT. So, in other words, it goes back to all these time frames prior to. So again, we know the story, we know the route, we know the routine, we know Caitlin Clark was Jerry Cooney. Any other great white hopes out there? Maravich, Bird, all kind of tied in. They tried to paint it like it. And more importantly, it was a white black game. Iowa had one sister, Joe Stuckel. But basically, it was the Midwest, Iowa, right, versus the Southeastern National Recruits International. It was a total black-white game. And that was the other hidden layer to that whole thing, was literally a black-white game.
It was. But you got to remember this. No matter what Dawn had put in front of her, she handled it. She replaced.
Undefeated is not easy.
Let's not forget, she replaced five starters and put them in. I remember when Kentucky gave all that money to Calipari or Calamari, whatever the fuck his name is, and he was cranking out guys for the NBA, but he wasn't cranking out no titles. Dawn came in there, replaced five starters, and she essentially said to the whole roster, everybody in there does something really well. I'm going to make sure that all of us do what we do best and the results. We take care of themselves. She handled everything thrown at her.
It reminded me, it's a tennis analogy that we always talk about. When you go up against the Williams sisters, you may beat one of them, but you ain't going to beat both of them.
You might beat South Carolina in the first quarter or even the second quarter. But by the time you get to the third quarter, they whipping that ass. Dawn Staley is the best thing to come to South Carolina since Alexander English. And now everybody sees she's the real GOAT, not Vandeveer, as much as she's good and I respect her, not Oyema, as much as he's okay, but not Pat Summitt. She's the best because she took the best of everybody. She took the talent pool from everybody, and she made it work.
And there's another dynamic to that is the fact that she's an ex-player, and none of those people were. She's an Olympian. She's a WNBA All-Star. So she had a pedigree. Because she played point guard, most coaches who do really well are point guards, right? They played the position. So she understands what women's basketball needs and what successful women's basketball. And the other thing that she does, too, she has, and this is not uncommon in women's collegiate sports, especially basketball, they scrimmage men. So they find, intramural players or somebody that was really good in high school. So she has a whole 12-man team that they practice against all the time. She stated that all those men, and some brothers and some white cats, don't matter, that's a mix-up team, all those men who are practicing, she says they get rings too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But remember this. It wasn't that Caitlin Clark was a situation as a GOAT. She's a good player. I'm sure when she gets to the pros, she'll be a good player. I don't know if she'll be anything other than a good player, but the fact is she was a good player. She jumped on the hype train, and she gladly rode it. But what about Carol Blazejowski, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird? You know, these are women who have been
Cheryl Miller, Lisa Leslie,
Cynthia Cooper,
D'Amico.
I mean, the person most people slept on that I've seen play and was the first woman to talk about, Lynette Woodard. Caitlin Clark could not hold Lynette Woodard's cup of coffee.
No way.
Cheryl Swoops was no joke. She is not better than Cheryl Swoops.
Maya Moore.
She is not better than Maya Moore. What's the chick that played with UConn many years? Brianna Stewart, right?
My side chick, Lakeisha Sales. Sorry about that, Tony.
No, hey. Put it this way, you know, they had a bunch of goats
Shamequa Holdsclaw. What's the name? Candace
Harvey,
Parker.
Harvey. Oh, hey,
Candace
don't forget,
Parker.
Don't forget Harvey's little girl either.
Oh, yeah.
Tamika
Catchings.
I mean, the list goes on. I mean, Cheryl put it down. The McGee twins were nothing to laugh at neither. And so. If you go to your state university like Iowa, which she did, and she was homegrown, and they backed in to support her, and they had a coach that recruited around her, built a system around her, and she did have the skill set, and she didn't have a green light to score. She had a neon light to score, well above the green.
Right.
You know, well above the green. And she worked on a skill set. So it was akin, if you look at it comparatively, because basketball is about your system, your layout, and who you want to favor, because you can make Luka Doncic the leading scorer in the NBA. We know he ain't the best player in the NBA, but based on their system, he'll be the leading scorer in the NBA. This was akin to the Hick from French Lick when Bird was at Indiana State. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Indiana was too big a university, so if Caitlin went to a Stanford, Vanderveer is not letting her get off like she could get off in Iowa. It's not happening.
You can't ignore the fact
Gino
basically said, I got Paige Buchers. I'm good.
Yeah. but you see, this is what winning does. Dawn took players and made them winners. And other girls decided, I'll go to South Carolina. I don't need to go to UConn. I don't need to go to Stanford. I don't need to go to Tennessee.
Yeah, Dawn's viewpoint is this on a recruit trip. She recruits All-Americans, right? You know, I mean, she's not there without All-American players. Okay, so she recruits the best of the best. So she can get them to come to South Carolina, but she tells them straight up, you know, if you want to get off, get your 25-30, it's not going to be here because we're like 10, 11, 12 deep. We keep rotating players. So we're going to build a squad. And a team. So that's old school. You know what I'm saying? That's old school with the new school NIL shit, but still bringing the old school flavor. No promissories. Listen, you come here, we're going for national championship. It's the Wooden, you know, mojo where he had nothing but a bunch of All-Americans who had to sacrifice because that's all he recruited. But if they wanted to win championships, they went to UCLA. If they wanted to get off, they could go to UNLV and these other places.
And I guess beyond Wooden because they weren't.
It's well beyond Wooden.
I know what you mean.
Right.
They
okay,
weren't
gotcha,
sequestered.
Okay. All right.
She got the best of the best to come willingly. It wasn't like they stacked the deck. I got Reggie with me, and Reggie, this is a coronation. You've been smiling about Dawn for years. Well, how do you feel knowing that Dawn finally is where she's supposed to be? Now, I see you just left for a hot second, so I'll finish the point. The bottom line is, Dawn took on everybody that faced playing against her. She took on all comers and won. But really, this whole issue of the white savior or whatever, this is the nonsense that people like the LA Times and all you motherfuckers can kiss my black ass because you stink. It pisses me off that they want to spit on their sisters and purposely try to shatter their character. I remember what Keith Olbermann said about Angel Reese the year that LSU beat them. And Angel pointed to the ring on her finger, and he spit on her and came up with some invective. I'm like, how dare you? The bottom line is these folks are repugnant in the fact that black excellence really it bugs the fuck out of them. And it's not the fact that Dawn won. It's the way she won. It was a no-doubt ass whipping. And
well, the reality to that, though, she was a third-page story because the one and two page was Caitlin Clark, right? Yeah. So South Carolina wasn't even getting no love. We talked about that a few weeks back about, hey, it's really about keeping her off the front page. But there's one remedy to that. You just win. You win out.
Exactly.
That's the remedy.
Exactly. But the sad, but see, it just shows you how incompetent these news folks are. Because like Eric said, the story wasn't that. In their eyes, the story wasn't Dawn State
South Carolina being undefeated. Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was about Caitlin losing. And it's crazy because literally by the time I got home, on Sunday night to watch a little bit of the baseball game, they were already running ads for the WNBA draft.
And T-Mac on top of that, it's kind of interesting what that pressure is because. I'll give some political correctness to this component, which was really unnecessary. So Dawn made a statement after they won. She says, hey, I want to give Caitlin Clark credit for what she did for women's basketball.
That was just straight up
political bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's all that was. I mean, that's not a criticism. She played the game. You don't get that position out of South Carolina without playing the politic game, right? So she played that right. But because of how they pushed that agenda, she found it necessary to make that comment. She didn't think Iowa, right? She said, well, I don't think Caitlin Clark for how she handled this, that. You know what I mean? All part of the woman's height. Remember that?
Yeah.
So it was the flagship for the game, and she could see the benefit in that for all of women's basketball. So she made it poignant, but at the same time, it was unnecessary. But, right, I ain't mad neither. I got it. I know how that works politically, how you can play the neutral game. You can say that's a classy statement, a statement I loathe, classy. Like, what the fuck is classy and shit? First class, third class, eighth class? You know what I mean? So the classy thing I like to stay away from. But I got that. But that was the impact in the media point that took place. Clark took it on. She took all that on. She handled it as best she could with what she had to give. I give her credit for that component. But, again, you know, all the things that come with that, that's because you're pushing that dollar. You're pushing that attendance. You're pushing that betting money. You're pushing that popularity, and you got to ride something. They rode Clark.
You know that's right. You know that's right. But there's a saying I used to hear in the old neighborhood. Everybody's got somebody's number. I got Reggie with me, and I got Patrick Farrar with me. And somebody had her number, Caitlin Clark's number, a long time ago. And she knew it. And basketball knew it.
She got that revenge on her ass. Sister picked her ass twice. She said, that's just fuck it.
There you go.
Actually, it was Iowa that got their ass kicked. Let's keep that 100 and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it was Iowa. They had a good team. They played well. They had a lot of things in their favor. But, you know, in all due respect, man, I wore number 22. So be light on the deuce. And they had her number, man.
She wore the deuce suits really well. Caleb weighed the ass off and crushed his gun spirit. They had to rebuild that young lady's spirit.
Be light on the deuce, deuce. I can't emphasize that enough, man.
I'm gonna whip this cracker's ass.
Be light on the deuce, deuce. I mean, I got dudes I know who playing brother. They were looking for Caitlin Clark jerseys. They're like, yo, E, where can I get an authentic Caitlin Clark? Our brothers was asking me this shit.
Really?
Right?
Yeah.
No, I am not bullshit.
Yeah.
All BS aside.
Yeah.
The only thing that can outdo that is a Sacramento. The only thing that can do that, fellas, is a Sacramento athletic jersey. Right, G?
Exactly.
All I know is somewhere Dave the Busher is kicking his dog. I'm
there
are
Duke
too.
Elgin Baylor and Emmitt Smith are having a what the fuck is
that?
Yeah.
Who made more money? The WWE betting or the basketball team? Who made more money? Up there in Philly, Mike. Y'all lost your mind. I mean, with the rest of
Reggie, I can answer that question. Shohei Ohtani.
Yes, sir.
There you go. Shohei
Ohtani's interpreter or line two? Shohei Ohtani's interpreter or line two?
But Patrick, how did the bet go this time on the basketball tournament? How much money did it peak at? 24 million. That's, oh my God, that's the high. Now, and they sell it about 17, 8. What people recall,
the first one to go over 10 million, actually with 11 million, was with two young ladies named Shel Miller and her backroom, a backcourt partner, what's her name?
Oh,
Cooper?
God.
Cooper, yes.
Cindy Cooper.
When the games they did was over 11 minutes. People forget that. So, you know, but I have to give them credit for what they did. You guys have mentioned they were talking the draft on Thursday night. They were talking about the draft, women's draft. So
good Lord.
What it is. I will say this. I will say this. The best thing about the evening, one of the things that I talked to Mike about this afternoon, that they escorted some people for what they shouldn't, was when they went to the telecast of down
at the end of the game, right? At the end of the game.
Yeah.
Right.
Tarashi said, basically, you know, I give her credit for what she's done to the game, but, you know, she's about to go into an area where you're playing 18-year-olds, you're playing women. And now, I've heard commentators just jump all over Tarashi as a hater. She ain't no hater. She's just saying what it is. She's not, she didn't put the woman down. She just is laying, this is what's going to happen.
But you know what? That's not the narrative. That's not the narrative. You got Iowa, right? Don't they hold those political caucuses out there in Iowa,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
oh,
you got So you got Iowa, middle American like an MF-er.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Lily,
to say the least.
They got that ass back. Hey, but Patrick, what got me was the sisters dancing on top of the stage and the white girls coming out couldn't even do the handshake right. The way that white group was out there, you cannot tell me they won't holler and racial slurs.
Well, Reg, you already know the deal, man. When it comes down to, you know, the ladies, man, grits and gravy over corn stalks every time.
Pretty much.
Matter of fact, South Carolina is the most black populated dense state in the United States.
Yep.
in many ways,
per population in the United States.
It's like the old way of DC being Chocolate City, in a sense.
Yeah, South Carolina is black as a state.
I'll go even further. South Carolina is the new Georgetown. Dawn Stevens teaches defense.
Yeah, you can see that.
They are very tenacious.
The female version.
Every player on the squad can do more than one thing.
You know, the star freshman they had that they kicked off the team? Because she just did not want to go to class. She didn't want to act right.
Don't play that.
You ain't got to say it. You get the hell out of here.
Exactly.
I don't blame him. You know why I don't blame it? It'll be in the headlines of ESPN tomorrow. The girl doesn't go to classes. They'll add to all the things that they want to put on her that she can't do.
Exactly.
I mean, well, if that's the case, they better not go into the campuses of Kentucky and others because ain't nobody going to class.
I mean, the last time
Bronny James seen a class was in high school.
And quite frankly, come on, guys. Let's be real. And Eric, you out there with him. That boy needs to stay his ass in school. Stop.
LeBron, we love you. LeBron, we love you, but there's a child abuse case with your name on it in another year.
No shit.
I'm sorry.
It all started with the physical illness, which I won't repeat. Because what happens is, I'll say it 1,000 times, I will say that Bronny James, he's not alone, has played more basketball than the average guy in a junior college in his second year right now. Just with all the AAU, the prep, the leagues, the titles. He's played more basketball games of competitive nature that's not official than a lot of people going into their fourth year of college. Okay?
Right.
Because of all the extra all year round playing.
Exactly.
And it's tax issues, let alone the pressure, let alone the cardio exchange.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Eric, let me ask you this.
Sure.
From the East Coast to the West Coast.
Right.
You know the ballers out there trying to get into the league.
Coach them.
That he going to go against, like Tarasi said, you ain't playing against 18-year-olds no more. It's going to be rough on the young boy.
I'll give you an example of that. Yeah, and there's so many, but something comes to mind. Remember Jerry McMahon? What's his name? The short white guy. He's assistant coach with Syracuse. Next. Jerry McMahon. He played on my summer league team, right? G-Mac. He played on my summer league team, right? And he's about 5'9", has no quicks, no handles. He got on a Vegas summer league roster that year, right? Now, I was working with, in my little minor league, the Sacramento Heat Wave, a short-lived ABA team, may I say. And what took place with that, we scrimmaged him. He couldn't get off a fucking shot. And this is a guy that was a four-year player, dominated the Big East tournament, had that great double overtime game against Georgetown, or I believe it was, right? He had about 53 pointers. The way we locked him up, he couldn't get off a shot.
Exactly.
You follow?
You can't get 86 picks.
And you know what? You can't get 86 picks and still get off with 5 points. G-Mac knew at that point in time, he hung up his shoes. That's when he became a Syracuse assistant coach, which he is still now. And I've seen that many times before. I mean, I've seen where guys wanted to play Artest, Met of World Peace, when he was the Kings. He played on my squad, right? And there was a guy out there who was like a globetrotter. A lot of these guys wanted to go to D-Leagues and played overseas. When Artest locked up, couldn't go no damn where. Nowhere. Follow? I mean, the brother's built like a box. He's got arms like a 7-footer. And when he moves his feet and gets his place physical, these dudes realize, I'm not an NBA player. Same thing when Bobby Jackson was rolling.
You know what I'm saying? You know, he was out there playing, and there was a guy. I said, by this, I think he can come up. And so they'll give you that little 10-minute of NBA action. They won't play 40 minutes of that, right? But they'll give you that 10-minute look of, like, what it's really like. And you can't get off and shit. Bronny could not play out there, you know, but he'll get a chance because LeBron's could pay too many NBA checks. So just by virtue of that alone, he'll get a two-day contract somewhere, G League, pro shit. They'll activate him for a few games or whatever. He's got an 82-game player. Probably hook it up where he plays against the Lakers. And guess what? If he's available, GD Buston, I'm going to fucking take him.
You know, I just saw the G League championship. I saw two of the games. I'm like, they got about four guys in the league. I'm going, you know, even, you know, the guy, what's the white boy that won the dunk contest?
McClung.
Mm-hmm. He was the MVP of one of the series. I read him going, yeah, I don't know. I have my.
Well, realistically, he's not a, you know, I mean, if you want to put an NBA grade on, he's not an NBA grade player. He couldn't even, he's not even all Pac-12. He's not even honorable mention all Pac-12.
Well, he made all Big East.
McClung? No, I'm talking about Bronny, right?
He wasn't even honorable. He wasn't even dishonorable mention.
All freshman, nothing.
You know what I'm saying?
So typically, that's a resume that reads, you're not an NBA player all day long. But again, you're not the son of the all-time leading scorer.
That's true, too.
Yeah. I mean, in a best case scenario, and this is probably not something LeBron wants to hear, but maybe he can be a Dudley Bradley that will hang out in the league long enough to.
It won't even be that. He'll get his cup of coffee. But this is, to me, if your father as a black man and you want to represent and you promoted your child and you got yourself in a position and you played long enough to make that happen, we have seen nepotism in the other man society dominate all day long. I mean, Shanahan is nepotism as an NFL coach. McVay is nepotism as an NFL coach, right? So if nepotism gets him in the league, I'm all for it. I don't even bother me one iota because I've seen him for so many years. We all know the legitimacy of his basketball. We're keeping it real, speaking just to the basketball skill set. You're right. You know, this is the akin of Mavis Frazier getting in the ring with Mike Tyson.
And
your points were taken. Let me give you the secret that people don't understand about my 8 years in the front office. The secret is the NBA is a small run company.
It's a family run business. Yes.
Okay, it's who you know, who you're attached to. It's nepotism
and cronyism dominate.
Jeez. You're right about relationship.
Again, back to the coaching where you have more longevity as a coach than the player. And coaching, you can't really grade a person and say, like Flip Saunders, his son ended up being coaching the Minnesota Timberwolves. Simply because it was Flip Saunders' kid. No more than that. Bernie Bickerstaff's son is out there in the NBA with Cleveland.
That's right.
Okay, I ain't mad at that. You know what I mean? But we see it all the time where these guys will hire their sons as assistant coach. I mean, what credentials does, Belichick's son have to be a defensive coach other than being Bill Belichick's son?
Hey, so if
James gets the boost because his dad made the NBA rich, put in all that work, and they see an opportunity there with his father son thing, ain't no way
it'll cost him nothing in comparison.
No way if he comes out, he's not going to get a taste. He'll get a taste.
Rick Pitino is in Mexico.
Same thing.
He got it. From the Minnesota to New Mexico.
I mean, we can go through the whole list. I mean, what's that dude that used to coach the DePaul? Joey Meyer, his son.
Joey Meyer came out.
I mean, John Thompson's boys, right? They stepped in. You know,
both
so
of
if
them.
You can, if,
I know both
exactly,
of them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So if you can set a path, and the way I see it, and put yourself in position, because it's rare that you can do that. I mean, we see a lot of father-son combinations in professional sports everywhere. Very rarely do you see a father-son at the level and arc of LeBron James, NBA's all-time leading scorer, period.
Yep.
That's
absolutely
up there, man. Yeah. And so if his son's in a, so if his son, which we've been talking about, comes into the league and he had enough longevity to stay in the league long enough for his son to like be on the court and say, man, fuck it, let
that's
it happen. I'm all for it. That's what I'm saying. I'm all for it. I mean, there's a, I mean, is, where I push back is, yeah, I can do a scouting report on Bronny James and dissect it to like, right, all day long. Like, hey, put him in the G League, let him develop. I'm not going to do it with this one because I've seen too many times where the Caucasoid, it looks out for its own, and we see these guys in the league that shouldn't even be getting a whiff.
Well, I'm going to say another guy that was skeptical on until he, you know, he proved himself he could play, Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I mean,
there was some question about him, but he got a little game to him.
Yeah. Well, Rivers, he was just too arrogant. You know, he was despised.
Yeah, he was.
He's too
was.
Arrogant. You know, he had a lot of likability factors with other players. You know, this, that, and the other, and the Clippers loathed him because when he was with the Clippers, they thought, you know, it was totally nepotism. You know, playing for his father that he was. Turnovers. It was an ugly look there. But still, Doc was not in uniform like LeBron James.
That's right.
Big difference.
Yeah, this is a different. Because the closest thing that we're gonna see that we've sort of seen to this is of course is the Griffies. That's it.
Well, in other words, it's like everyone knows and their grandma knows when you look at the statistics of Brody, you look at his skill set, but you got to give a young man credit because he can stand in that shit and handle it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I give him credit because he's staying strong in it, you know, even though he's under a lot of pressure. But the point is, I tell you what, if he comes out, he may not play all 82 games. They may give him that two-league deal, right, that G League, NBA deal, that back-and-forth deal. But he's going to get a taste. He's going to get a taste on that NBA floor. And Adam Silver wants to ensure that as bad as possible.
How many years in the league do you have to play to get your pension?
I can answer that question. I can answer that question, Tony. You know what? He don't need it. He got a $5 million NIL deal. He don't need it.
Let's even push back that. Someone said, "Ask LeBron." Right? They asked LeBron. Yeah. And they said, "If Bronny comes out early, we know he's not doing it for financial reasons." LeBron said, "Oh hell no, he ain't doing it for financial reasons." LeBron's a billionaire.
Oh hell yeah.
His daddy is a billionaire. The heck with the NIL. I mean, LeBron takes $5 million and throws it at a 30-minute Netflix shot.
And Bronny got a production company. He got over 260,000 likes or something like that. Oh, yeah. He ain't nothing but a walking advertisement.
Not to mention that he's wearing his dad's number. He's wearing his dad's old number at USC, so you know they're going to jump on that jersey.
Bronny will play in the NBA at some point next season. I ain't saying he's going to play all 82, but he will be playing.
Hold on, fellas. Hold on. I thought there was a rule that you only allowed to use 0 to 55, you know, 0 to 5, 10 to 15, et cetera, et cetera. How did Bronny get 6 on his jersey?
They changed the jersey numbers this year. You see 26s. You see 36s now in the college game.
Yes, you do.
Mills
got 88, man. Patty Mills got 88.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They changed the number system, part of the NIL stuff.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Okay. Well, Mike, LeBron is now become the cash cow
in the college game now too.
But all these moves notwithstanding, you know, you made me real when you talked about Mavis Frazier. Mike Tyson beat him down to the white knee. It was an ugly sight. It was like, how you brought this boy back was beyond me. But having said all that, it takes us back to the reality of the beginning of the show where we talked about, here's this white girl who's average at best. I mean, Diana Taurasi was exceptional. She had skills that made her unique. You know, Carol Blazejowski, she said, or it was said about her, all she could do is shoot. But
yes, she
just
can.
Like saying, well, all James Brown could do is sing. Shoot. You know,
yeah.
Sue Bird.
Nancy Lieberman.
Nancy Lieberman. All these girls.
Ann Meyer. Ann Meyer. Ann Meyer.
There you go.
Ann Meyer.
That's true.
All of them have legit game. All had legit game. And here she comes to the mix. And since you're talking about Deuce Deuce, don't forget my favorite player, Andrew Toney. But the bottom line here is, long and short, the WNBA must capitalize from a promotion standpoint. Patrick,
and they will.
And I know you'll feast on the idea of this, but you got Angel Reese coming out a year early, which is another thing that nobody think about. She wasted a year and said, I'm going to go get paid. So you got her, and there's another player, I forget her name, but her, between her, Caitlin Clark.
Well, Paige Beckett's going.
They're trying to make a Magic Johnson birthday.
Didn't work.
Well,
Reese and Clark.
Mm-hmm. We know that. But
Didn't work. The Magic Bird bullshit didn't work. Yeah, they were trying to frame it like that. That was not even close.
Yeah.
It wasn't even close. It wasn't even close.
Even though, you know, in the end, it got what they wanted. But I'll say this. The team that you watch out for next year, besides South Carolina, watch out for UConn. They have four stars missing.
Yeah, my girl Juju. My girl Juju. And Juju had better stats as a freshman than anybody, including Caitlin Clark.
Exactly.
And they got some more help. Juju's in conversation with Embiid already. Going with a bad self.
There it is.
They laid out a blueprint for success for next season. Now, it's not a gimmick. It's not something that's unusual. Women's ball is not legit. And the draft, I'm sure, will get a lot more feedback and a lot more butts checking out who went where. But the long and short of it is, it's a matter of improvement. The women's game got better, and that was because of the coaches. And it's because of the coach, Dawn Staley, that they can say this. You got a coach who averaged 37 wins a year for the past 3 years. I don't give a fuck. That's serious.
I thought Tony's numerical breakdown was beautiful. I mean, it had all the key points. Staley had more wins than any of them, you know, substantially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so those are very accurate numbers.
Yeah,
where you know in the stat loving world, they love to push the numbers and the data.
Mm-hmm.
But those data analytics also checks out to the on floor version as well, and she does it on a low low, so it's really exceptional.
Eric, that's why ESPN had to shut the fuck up. You know, they were looking for hopefully the upset, so they could really come in with both feet and stomp all over Dawn.
Yeah, I mean, my God, they're talking heads. Yeah, they're talking heads. What's that song? Backing that ass up. On
yeah,
that
they
concept.
Were.
My God, they were backing that ass up.
You know they were.
Mike, I want to throw an interesting point relative to the game for on the male side. that no one's talking about it, but I think it's interesting because it aligns itself with the shipping of college basketball like it hasn't been the last couple of years. The Ignite League, in which the guys, young guys, go from high school right in this league to become professional, they close the league down. They close it down because the guys in college are making more money in NIL than they make in the league. So a lot of young guys who thought they were going to go to the Ignite League and make that way in the league.
That's a small percent, though, right? It's not universal. It's a small percentage. Like Shadur, I mean, Shadur is rolling Bentleys, right, in Colorado. You know what I'm saying? To keep it 100. You know what I mean? And no one at the college level is getting Shadur cash because the football players are still cracking the most loot. Travis Hunter and them are flipping houses in fucking Boulder and shit just for the hell of it because they're getting broken off like that. You know what I mean? So that's a different level because they get more exposure because that, you know, that once-a-week deal. As opposed to, like, you know, you're playing Lemoyne Owen on Tuesday and shit. Then you got the Friday Michigan State game, right? Then Sunday you're playing the HBCU beatdown for a home game in game number four, where college every 12 is nationally televised.
Well, my thing is, I'm seeing that. Some guys realize that was an outlet. You know, you go to school with so many schools for a year, and you can make up for that if you're good enough.
But the problem with that is, again, is this. Here's the trade-off to that. You know, like this guy Bacot from North Carolina, right? He's literally maxed out every year he could because of NIL money. He's not going to get NBA contract money. He won't even be a first-round pick. Zach Edey did really well with his, you know, NIL because he was the top player of the year. But he's not even projected to be drafted. See, that's the mythology, the NIL shit.
Edey's on the draft.
Well, no. What I'm saying is in most drafts, he's not even projected. But my point being is he's not even considered, you know, he's considered like a 10-minute-a-game player the way the NBA game is played is my point. But my point being is he may never see the same loot again that he got in college. That's the trade-off. You max that out, but then again, you may never see it again if you don't know how to manage it. So it's a short window. But then again, it's no different than back in the day when guys were getting broken off unofficially with the NIL. You know, I'm saying Magic and them were getting broken off crazy money to go to Michigan State, these colleges.
Hell yeah.
I mean, all the time. I mean, Eric Dickerson was like saying, shit, I don't know if the NFL could ever pay me what SMU was giving me. Tark was taking care of him. Absolutely,
he didn't care.
Yeah, Tark was taking care of him.
Offer 75, and them people got him. They said, "Damn, how much are you in the UNLV offer 75?" That wasn't enough. They said, "Damn, and don't give me my Cam Newton father the deal he pulled." They still trying to figure out where that money went. Hey, but guys,
you know
talking about all of a sudden, man. But real quick question, guys, help me understand something there. How come all of a sudden they talking about these goo gobs of money, but when it comes to now the Super Conference, then now, Patrick, help me with the Super Conference, because now they talking about lower tier D1 and have all the big boys on one level. That's what they
going to be next.
Don't be surprised if it happens.
The Super Conference.
That contract that Big Ten got, that $7.8 billion, it's going to rise now because of the 12 teams in the playoffs. It's going to rise. They're negotiating it now. I know that much.
Okay. They're renegotiating the contract?
Right. Yeah, who said they can't? To win a national championship, you have to win 12 to 14 games. They're going to get that 12-team playoffs. What's that mean? That's more money that they didn't include in the contract they already got. I got
you
that.
Hold on. Oh, no. We got to renegotiate this. Ain't this a bitch?
Damn right. You can do that.
Right about that.
If you want some cold water thrown on the subject, check out a movie called National Championship. I forget who produced it, but J.K. Simmons starred in it. He was a coach. And this star quarterback wants to go on a player's strike. On the national championship. It was a pretty good movie, and they had some ESPN talking heads in it. The long and short of it is, They know where this money's going to go. They know who's going to get it. The bottom line is, how is this thing going to get presented? I want Dawn to be recognized as a great coach. I don't want her to be looked at as some cartoon character who took a bunch of chicks from the hood and made them a legitimate basketball team. It's none of this Ivan Snappy-headed whole shit here. You know, she was a former basketball player, former pro. She taught these girls a certain style. And, again, mentally, she outsmarted everybody. You don't like the idea that she outcoached you? Too fucking bad. Get better. They're not going to mention it.
You know, what she did,
the prime example of how coaching people Sunday, recall when they were down like 10, 12 points. Did you let them call timeout?
Thank you.
Nope.
We called that Patrick, we called that the rope-a-dope. Like, let Caitlin come out swinging, Foreman style, get 21 in the first quarter, and then fizzle over the next three by throwing different defenders at her. And that's what happened. I mean, anyone can root out that. Anyone can look at that playbook. But again, you know, you always have someone who sets the example, and we're strong here on giving props to historical things because we have the historical information. And basically, because she came over on the East Coast, she coached at the Temple. She's a Philly girl, and she was local, so she followed the template set by Vivian Stringer. When Vivian Stringer was at Cheney State in Pennsylvania, Vivian Stringer got to roll out Rutgers. You know what I'm saying? And did her thing and had a lot of longevity.
Iowa too now.
That's my point. At Iowa too. So Vivian Stringer, you know, Dawn just morphed that into her own flavor, but she had a great example in following the lineage of Vivian Stringer, which you'll recognize.
That's right.
And you make sure she gets close to it. But
that's my point. So we're going to prop her up. We're going to show the left. We're going to show the lineage, man. Not out of the blue. Dawn's not out of the blue. As others, she stands on a lot of strong shoulders. Stringer, in this case, being one of them.
Got a question for you, Aaron. Now, with this album, when I get white conservative men talk about Dawn Staley doing too many social issues, I want to get your thoughts on this. Okay, Big John Thompson. How many people benefit? God taking a stand by himself. How many people benefited when they had all white boys out there in the 40s and 50s and then the 60s?
Yeah, and that's what we're speaking to with the Bronny thing. You know, like I said, to me, if a brother sets the stage to put his son in a better position, I don't give a fuck about his statistics. Let him jump off if you put the work in. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. If we're sitting down chopping up real game, and we want to do real, like, you know, talent level, we can do that all day long. How many of us know, we've talked about this in the past, how many of us know brothers on the come up, because they didn't fit the system, had more talent than those people in the profession?
Thank you.
How many of us
know
everybody here can speak to that.
Many.
Right? All of us can speak to that shit, right? I mean, I knew dudes who were so nice with their damn hands and shit. I was like, shit, I mean, this guy's the world champ, but he didn't have the block boulevard, you know what I mean? But, you know, and just real, and that's what Emmanuel Stewart did in Detroit with Kronk. He took those guys who were just straight up fighters and made them professional fighters. But we know people in all avenues, right, that had crazy talent, crazy skills, something just didn't happen. Injury here, a tweak there. So we all know people that never got to shine. But around the way, we knew how nice they were.
I can tell you, Eric, I can tell you from a personal standpoint, I heard about Raymond Lewis long before
he embraced
Doug Collins. I mean, this guy came in the camp, and he lit Doug Collins' ass up. He embarrassed the shit out of him, and he said, pay me his money because I earned it. I'm better than him. The front office is better than him. The day they invested all this money in him.
Hey, Mike, Pee Wee Kirk in Norfolk State back in the day was making more money on the side than what he was playing back.
Fly Williams. Right? Fly Williams. You know what I'm saying? Out of Brooklyn. You know, you know, Austin P. You know, I mean, Marcus Dupree went to Oklahoma. They said the greatest that never was. That was the best 30-30 they've ever done to me, was the Marcus Dupree story.
He was so good, and he was
and guess what? Eric, and Mike, and guess what, guys? Guess what? You mentioned Marcus Dupree?
Yes, sir.
Guess what? What Sunday?
Marcus Dupree.
Marcus Dupree.
See there? Right. I mean, that's how we're all connected. Marcus Dupree, you know, went through some shit. He didn't have no one to follow him. There was a lot of stuff that went on. He took a whole year off after not playing that USL thing, whatever was going on with New Orleans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dedicated himself and became a damn near 1,000-yard rusher on his own volition. And they thought he was done. And he said, listen, what's that guy? He said, Robinson cut him the next year. John Robinson at SC when he was the Rams coach, which he should have made the team. And Marcus was like, nah, I just wanted to prove I could do it. That's how nice he was. Fuck, I got a knee injury. I'm going to take 3 years off from the league, be out the loop. They go sign them, and I'm going to damn near go for 1,000. That's how great I am.
And the guy was bigger than what I thought he was.
He's a big dude,
he's
man.
I thought he was like maybe 6 foot. He's 6'3", man.
They say he was the greatest. They say he's the greatest that never, but there's many like that, man. I mean, there's many people we know came up with, you know, that just had the skill set. Something happened, a tweak here, but they still were like exceedingly productive.
I was doing research.
What was the running back that Jim Brown was back and that wanted to go to the NFL early?
Ernie Davis.
Young brother. That Jim Brown went up there and talked for. And
Maurice Clarett?
Yeah, he really said that.
I mean, if you go to the Rucker League, Super Joe Hammond. I mean, you know,
there you go.
They wanted to sign him with the Lakers. Of course, he said he makes more money in the street, so he, you know, he was in the street doing his thing thing. You know what I mean? But doing his thing thing. But the point was, as far as B-ball is concerned, dope. I mean, this cat's out there. I mean, I've seen track runners. Like, you know, my brother, he ran track. You know, he had state records, this and another. But Dennis Mitchell, you know, he became like an Olympic gold medalist.
Yes, indeed.
Terry Metcalf Jr. Yeah, those were his boys. You know what I'm saying?
Who's the hurdler?
Greg Foster. Remember Greg Foster, the hurdler?
Yeah.
Those kind of cats like that.
Jeremiah.
I mean, there were some guys out there that could, like, really put in, like, this crazy work. You know, may not have been an Olympic gold medal. They got pushed back, something like that. But could they play? Did they have Howard Davis, you know, was my man Howard Davis, rest in power. Long Island dude. He was the boxer, 76 Olympics.
Yeah.
With Spinks, Sugar Ray. John Tatum, dude. The Spinks brothers, Sugar Ray. Somebody else was in that group, too. But Howard was voted the best fighter of the sir, all those gold medalists. You know what I mean? And Howard became a heavyweight, you know, a lightweight champ for a little bit. Really good brother. Conscious, all that kind of stuff like that. But, you know, again, you know, he was very nice with his skill set on the Lola. We got a pantheon of this in our community. That's why we say the NBA and the professional levels, the NFL, all that kind of stuff like that, it does not mean they really got the best players. They got the ones who were best for the system.
And to survive.
I agree. But it's more important that we protect these people.
Correct.
People speaking up to protect Dawn than those assholes who work for the L.A. Times and put their bullshit out about LSU. We're the people who can speak up with their bylines and say enough of this shit. We can't.
The Washington Post, real quick. Washington Post, I read that article. I laughed at 3 minutes. Because the moment they said that, you know, Kim Mulkey was like I won't use the gay LGBT. I said that is ultimate bullshit. Because she played women's basketball. She's been around women's basketball. You cannot be around women's basketball without an LGBT environment. No way possible. And so for her to be anti-LGBT, anti-gay players, or to tell Griner, don't, you know, air your lifestyle in public. Maybe she may want her to downplay it a little bit to take away pressure on her, maybe. But ain't no way she's anti that if she's coaching women's basketball and been around that many years. Impossible. Impossible.
That's right. Don't lay up, don't tell.
Correct. Impossible.
Because, brother, if you go to a WNBA game, like I tell for years, you better find out who you're talking to, because as fine as she might be, she might not be for you.
Well, you know what? You know, I remember when I was at TSU and I went down to Fisk University, and you know how you hear rumblings about what's taking place in that world and that environment,
uh-huh.
right? But really no hands-on, you know what I mean? No real experience around it. But they had a tournament there, and, you know, different schools came in. Wow. That was like my first exposure to, yeah, okay, very interesting observations. Refs, coaches, announcers, players, it's just a whole mix where it's not only for basketball, but there's a congregation going on of, you know, other activities as well.
Show enough.
That is very visibly obvious. That I bore witness to many years ago. So again, me, I don't really give a damn who gets with who.
That's
you know
business.
What I mean? Because mm-hmm. my mentality is, you know, like I said, you know, as a dude, I don't like how anybody can not want a woman. It's beyond my mental comprehension. But I'm not anti anybody who goes the route they go.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you cannot mm-hmm. coach in women's basketball, lead women's basketball, recruit women's basketball, go to women's basketball conferences, practice, play, have teammates, know what you're
mm-hmm.
your players are doing, and have the anti-sexuality of women liking women. No
mm-hmm.
way. And when I read that, mm-hmm. when I touched on that, I seen that first two paragraphs leading towards her aunt, I was like, whoa, this is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And
guess what? Guess what? But all the women are in the front seats. When all the years I covered in WNBA, I covered Liberty, when they were here in Jersey for 2 years and
mm-hmm.
up in the Garden. All the best seats, you think about it, the woman in the front, the dudes in the back, because they got to see their friends.
Well, also they widely market, you know, the WNBA widely markets
yes.
for the LGBT community
yes.
as well.
Yes.
Well,
in the beginning of WNBA, they bought that for 2 or 3 years. Everybody said, okay. Let's bring them in, and then it's double in 3 years, double.
Now it's the majority of agenda.
Please.
Yes.
Let's look at this on the next level. We know that the WNBA draft is coming up next week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a given.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana's going to take Caitlin Clark. Angel's coming out, and Angel might get taken by, say, Minnesota. The other great player who's there, potentially great player, they get selected. Marketing-wise, this covers a lot of territory. Minnesota, it'll be a little more open
Angel's
to it.
Angel's slated to go fifth, man. I mean, basically, Angel's looking to go fifth because it's the young lady from Stanford slated to go second.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep, the blonde girl. Yeah.
Wicks,
cool.
I think
yeah.
her name is Wicks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's
yeah.
right. That's the one who I couldn't remember. But the long and short of it is they've got a marketing gift put in their hands. I mean, they're going to put them where they want them. There'll be more asses in the seats. Will they go after more money? Of course they should. But the long
yep,
and short
should.
Of it is now.
Ice Cube got $5 million on the table. Ice Cube
yeah.
got $5 million on the table.
That's right.
That
yep.
won't happen. That won't happen.
Mm. Yep. What we got here?
I got Professor on the line. Professor, I know you can hear me. Good evening, my brother. And did you watch the game? And are you surprised that Dawn won as convincingly as she did? And good evening.
Good evening. No, I didn't watch the game. I've watched very few highlights. I've just been busy. I think we should all be patting Lady Dawn on her shoulder, her back, pumping her up
oh, yeah.
because she did a yeoman's job. I think the last time something like this occurred was back in the days of John Wooden and UCLA.
Yeah, that's right.
And see, I have a totally different take on a lot of that stuff anyway, because
okay.
I think finally the NCAA is putting money into women's basketball. They're putting women's basketball up front where it should be, because it's as ludicrous as, you know, everybody want to know who you top five all time, all this kind of stuff. It's that total bull crap anyway. And then to go back and look and say, well, Clark is the greatest of all time. Bull crap. Just, you know, young lady from South Carolina, from Princeton Mary, South Carolina, scored more points, didn't have a three-point line, and played against equally good players. Because
correct.
For those who don't know, back in the day, the AIAW was women's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff about the NCAA. The NCAA back when she was doing what she was doing at Francis Marion on the Quality Hall of Fame coach, Sylvia Hatchell. Pearl was the Pearl. She was about 5'7". She could shoot range. And like I said, back then they just been calculated if she had a three-point line based on the way where most of the shots came from, she'd have scored well over 6,000 points. But that's speculation. Well, so is the fact that when you look at, you know, and not to take anything away from Clark, what she did, or the young lady from LSU and some of the others. But, you know, we start to look at these games and look at these, what have we done? We've done for me lately situations. And, you know, at the end of the day, we screw a whole lot of people out of a lot of glory that they deserve because, yeah. You know, you go to your top 100, what you got? You know, because there are those who would say, well, the other Pearl, Earl Monroe Pearl, what if he, you know, what if he took him out? You can't take him out. He did, you know, he scored the most points in, you know, in 1 year that lasted a long, 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 long time, plus won a national championship. At a time when you know, and I look at some of these ridiculous speculations and everybody's, you know, from whether it's Stephen A. or whoever, you know, a lot of this stuff that they're talking about is ludicrous. And because of that, what do you have if you take away some of these young ladies or these young men? You know, what do you have? You have a bunch of bull crap that is not even necessary, but at the same time we look at we devalue a lot of these young people, what they do, and you know, and knowing and understanding the work that goes into just being on the team,
one of the HBCU teams I was impressed with this year. Unfortunately, they didn't go further in the tournament. Was Jackson State's team. That team was really good. The Fremont team was really good. I saw him play twice up here locally in Jersey.
Well, Jackson State is among HBCUs. Jackson State is probably the flagship program. Once you get into the playoffs, it's all about matchups. And, people say, well, who do you have in your bracket? I don't do a bracket. I think it's nonsense. Well, why would you say that? Grambling. Okay? Grambling. They're from a good conference. They swag. They played well.
I saw them play once, yeah.
But guess what? They made the third round.
Yeah.
How many people want to shoot themselves in the head for not having grambling? And see, that's where all this, that's where, but it's just bull, you know, it devalues the game.
Professor, you got to remember, they fell prey to the gambler's mentality. You know, nobody could have said right off the bat that Kentucky was going to fall first time out. I mean, do you know how much money was wiped off the board? How much money the casinos made because Kentucky lost that first game?
I understand all of that.
That's way beyond goo. That's way beyond gob. That's way beyond googa. I mean, it's an unreal amount of money.
Yeah.
I wish we could add it up and tell you straight up in dollars how much it was. All I know is if there was say $25 million bracket done.
Woo,
and let's just say for argument's sake each bracket was a dollar. You lost at least $10 million off that one game. Do the math too for how much you think it would be TV wise.
But see, Mike, if you take a realistic look at it, what you got? You got Calipari has been going downhill on a slippery slope for years.
And I agree. And
the powers that be have tolerated him and his fallacy all this time. Again, let's ask a proverbial question. How many black coaches would they have tolerated doing what he did?
All you have to do is ask Tubby, Tubby Smith. Right?
And
Tubby,
he won
the national championship.
Tubby did well. John Thompson did well. You know, John Thompson was still being harangued, I guess you can use the term to use, at a time when he was graduating his players.
Yes, he was.
He was staying 4 years. He was graduating them. And even if they didn't graduate in 3-4 years, they came back and got their degree.
But that's exactly why you don't hear anything about Georgetown, because he did it right. They couldn't say anything. There was no dirt, no skeletons in the closet, anything about Georgetown. And that was one reason why they became the fraternity and the school of the streets. Because when they were out there
Mike
on the court, they were representing us.
Mike, add to that, John didn't give a damn. Move right along.
That's right. and that's why South Carolina's women's program did in New Georgetown. They come at you in waves. They go 12 deep. And it's like, if you can beat us, good for
you.
But I don't think you can. And Dawn made that clear. She took 5 players. She put in a new crew. They graduated 5. She put in 5 more, and they went undefeated. No coach that I know of, not even Wooden with his stacked deck, has gone as far as Dawn has.
No, and see, when we look back at her in a few years, we're gonna look and say, hey. That was nice right there, but
yep.
Then, you know, the other thing is you look at her. I remember this jackass named Whitlock was talking about how irrelevant Dawn was beyond Columbia. Okay,
yeah,
that is really funny.
I live less than 100 miles from Columbia, South Carolina. And I live in an area where you have North Carolina State, you have Duke, where my nephew will be going next year, and then we have the University of North Carolina. All of, you know, here's how crazy things are. All of a sudden, the Smith Center, which seats about 20 grand, they have hired a consultant to do a study to see whether or not they should go either renovate the Smith Center or build a new facility off campus. This is how the thing is going. We got to get bigger, better stuff. And all of a sudden with this plan, oh yes, the women will play in the Smith Center, the new facility also. Because see, most people don't know. Until very recently, most of the games that the women's games were played at Carmichael Auditorium, their old facility.
Mm-hmm.
And see, not only was this old, I mean, and it's a dump. I mean, a real the last thing that was really good that was played there was the high schools, and they got mad. They had to change that a few years ago when they would play. I think this year they play the men's and women's finals on NC State's campus, NC State's gym or facility. But, you know, I used to work with Mr. Moore during the high school playoffs, and one of the things that we would do is do the women's games. Well, guess what? The women's games were held in Carmichael Auditorium, a dump. And
McAdoo, all them guys played in that gym,
all,
right?
Those ghosts left. Like I said, it was a dump. They didn't hang around for that. And then, you know, when you look at the people that were there in those days to push that along, Scott, and, you know, that's where integration took place.
Right, Charlie Scott. Mm-hmm.
But you know, when we take time just to look through real basketball eyes and not this marketing plan and all this other yang that's going on.
My brand, yeah.
These people need to stop and cut. And see, remember, a lot of the people who are doing the talking are either has-beens or never were.
Never was, yeah, correct.
And unfortunately, you know, they're putting some things on some of these kids that's not even fair. Because,
well, to that point real quickly, Fred, the NC2A put out a statement because, you know, with the social media, the contact of try to limit the impact that college athletes are getting from bettors. You know, guy missed a free throw, their social media blows up, death threats, all kinds of shit with these players.
That's right.
The new world. And we talked about that a long time ago. And even in the pro world, they get, you know, you got your little Instagram account, you're getting instant messages blowing up, you SOB, you cost me $500,000 or whatever.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And now it's on the college level.
That's real.
The elephant in the room is gambling and gamblers. Whether they're big time, no time at all.
I remember the incident with Donovan Mitchell, the Utah Jazz. Some asshole jumped out and said, I bet $15,000 on you, or something to that effect. And this was during the game. And Mitchell was going after a loose ball, whatever, and the comments happened to hit his ears. And he was like, fuck you mean? And it got stupid to that. The bottom line is, the gambler's going to change this thing. It's going to change this way beyond.
It's already happening. I mean, these fantasy football people, man, they're just as insane. You know, guy drops a pass. Like, you know, for example, when they make a comment with the 49ers. When they make a 49ers act. You know, when the 49ers stated, the player stated, we didn't know the overtime rules.
Yep.
Oh, my
yep.
goodness. These yep. gamblers and bettors are pissed off. Yep. They're blowing up Shanahan's account, all the players. You know,
yep.
Debo gets hurt, you MF-er. How come you got hurt? We needed you. You cost me my fantasy football championship.
Mm-hmm.
All that shit flows into this.
That's
not neutral. None of this is neutral.
Well, see, it goes deeper than that because, see, now – with NIL and all this other stuff that's in play, you got people out there now who have been in the closet, so to speak, on all of this stuff. Now that it can be done openly, now we're really getting to see how they're doing it. You're getting to see how many are doing it, and it's beyond. See, within 5 years, the NCAA will be Division II, and that's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, college football has already gone to the level of professional with the expansion of the playoffs, 12, 14 collegiate games. You're not going to college. You're going to college to bring money in for bowl revenue and home game revenue and to get a college playoff.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going there for no education. So the whole thing is polluted. There's this terminology. I mean, back to this, you know, movie, what's that movie? He Got Game, Denzel and Ray Allen and them.
Yep.
When he gets to a Jesus Shuttleworth and tells him, "Hey man, son, I don't want you to be beholden to anything." There's almost no one not beholden nowadays.
Gentlemen, what happens in schools like SIU, Indiana State, Evansville, Bradley, what happened to them?
What happened? They go there and the players go there and audition for a year, then they jump in the transfer portal to go D1. It's like if you look at North Carolina. If that's what happened to that. If that's all it is. If you look at the dude from Oakland that hit all those three-pointers against Calipari, he was like in his 12th year. You know, the starting five for North Carolina State was all five-year players. They did a comparison between North University and North Carolina's average age of starters was 22.3 or something. Oklahoma
yep.
City's Thunder's average age of starters 22.1.
Exactly.
College
exactly.
is a hoax. You're watching guys who are mm-hmm. six-year players, five-year
yep.
players. You know, that. And Calipari, he recruits those freshmen, you know, so you get them to college, but he's being beaten by older, more mature players, more men. The difference between a 19-year-old and a 22, 23-year-old or older is substantial. Strength, maturity, all day long in basketball development. And that's what happened.
It's just like
so Oakland University was not Oakland University with a bunch of freshmen and sophomores. It was Oakland University with a bunch of third, four-year transfers, five-year players, mid-20 guys. The only thing that made it look lopsided was just the names of the universities. But Oakland had the advantage on maturity, and that's
it's
how
like
they won
they
the game.
Say, Eric, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. When Kentucky lost, it was like millions, I mean untold millions, was wiped right off the clock.
That's
everybody
the
in Las Vegas
right.
got a hard on. Uh-huh. Everybody else who was betting, they were like, well, who's missing in my bracket? But the bottom line is, I bet you more money was made on Kentucky losing that one game.
There it is. That's my point.
Bet on
you just hit it. You just hit it. Because when you do the side-by-side comparison, and my average age of start is 23-plus, and yours
yep.
is 19, and I'm going with that every time.
Exactly.
And see, so something that's not talked about today is fundamentals. The little bit of the Oakland game that I watched, one of the things I noticed, these guys were squaring up, and the more pressure they put on Kentucky, the sloppier they play.
Exactly.
Yep. And
the young,
and, you know,
young boys couldn't hang. Calipari coaches off talent. Period.
And someone we all know always have fundamentals always count. You know, you win with these kind of fundamentals every day. And little, you know, as you watch the progression of the games, one thing you'll notice is that not only were the guys from Kentucky getting sloppier, even when they came off, you know, all the things that Calipari was pointing out what that was wrong, you could see it. He should have seen it early to mid first half, but no, this is how we play. We're gonna get better. We can make adjustments at halftime, and we can come back and beat these old dudes. Well, guess what? You know, them old dudes had it together, and they kept it together. And at the end of the day, guess what? My understanding is Calipari's gone somewhere else to ruin somebody else's program.
Arkansas.
And they'll pay him to do it. That's the thing. They'll pay him to do it.
I mean, Calipari's straight hustler, man. Calipari's a straight hustler. You know, he's got a billion dollar buddy at Arkansas, case closed, you know, chicken coop shit. You know, so he's gonna rack up and do the hookup. Musselman bounced out of there to go to SC where he's more fit to do so. You know, but the thing being with Calipari, he's gonna still be in that conference. He'll get a lot of those players to transfer with him, to come over there with him, you know, because of the portal shit. But the thing is, it's gonna be the same production. College basketball, if you look at the teams that went to the finals, they are stacked with a bunch of 4 or 5 year players. The best players bounce after 1 year. Some of these guys are 6 year seniors. All that changed with the COVID thing when you get that extra year of eligibility. Then when you're a graduate, you got 5-6 year players nowadays. That never happened 20-30 years ago. It's the college name is the same, but the business of college basketball is Pimpology 101.
You ain't lying. I can hear the wah-wah pedals cranking up.
My goodness. People. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the pimping and pandering, my goodness, in the NCAA.
You ain't sick. Ain't no question about it. And you got to also remember, like Fred said, matchups make the game. I remember the matchup with Dr. Ben, with Ben Jovi, matched up against Georgia Tech and ran them off the fucking court.
Bobby Phils,
you know?
Right?
Yeah.
Bobby Phils was out there for Joe,
ran them
I
off
believe.
The court. It's not a surprise. We see this all the time when it's a matchup situation. Team A will always beat Team B if Team A is prepared better. Dawn prepares her team to win. Slow teams, fast teams, walk-up teams, post-up teams, fast break teams, bigger teams, smaller teams, fight
teams. It's a roster.
Teams.
It's a roster.
Yeah.
How she recruits and builds her roster out. She's got everything.
Exactly
size,
right.
Quickness, wing players, length, talent, thick, long, shooters, dribblers, defenders. She recruits with that level of balance. And she knows if she gets that on the roster, it's going to be tough to beat because no other women team can match that.
And then she says to the girls, ladies, we are the best at what we are, as what we can do.
Correct.
Just go out there and do the thing you do as best as you can do it, and we got this. And now they got it. And there's nothing anybody can do to take it away, and all the ESPNs can kiss the biggest part of my black ass because Dawn Staley is the GOAT, not Caitlin Clark, not all these other wannabe frauds and fakes. Dawn is the best, male or female, college coach alive right now. Gentlemen, we have final thoughts. We have final thoughts. And Reggie, since you're in the house, please set it off.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, it's interesting that when Dawn Staley took everybody to church, Reverend Staley, that is.
Yeah.
And then they got
Reverend
people out there saying, you don't need to talk about God. So what? Go ahead and tear up the damn White House. Go ahead and put the feces all over the place. Go ahead and try to do a revolution. We want to have America back the way it used to be. It just amazes me again how all of a sudden we don't need to talk about God. But Dawn Staley with her $5,000 Louis Vuitton jacket. I said, go on with your bad stuff and your $3,000 or $4,000 shoes. I'm like, it just amazes me how last year they had reporters calling the ladies gorillas, animals, and monkeys. But that's why Dawn kept talking about how last year was perceived. But it just amazed me again. And Professor, I had to say that I'm surprised that my man from Norfolk State, the basketball coach there, didn't get the ODU job. I think it was some politics, and they're gonna be sorry that they didn't give it to him. And real quick, down in Norfolk, they got the Norfolk Invitation, where they have the young men in college trying to try out in front of the pro people. And also, they're going to do another salute to Jewish Irving and the Virginia Squires. They do every year this week down in Norfolk.
There you go.
So, not 2 cents right there.
All right. I say, Patrick. Patrick, you there?
You're about to get in the sandwich.
I went to the toaster oven. He went to the toaster oven to check on that panini.
Before he reaches for the mustard to go on top of the cheese, Professor, come on in.
Well, first of all, glad you're on this week. And, you know, it's been kind of crazy. Fayetteville State, they had their best season ever, winning 28 games. They ended up being 29-3, I think it was.
Yes.
You know, this was the best year they've had in the history of their program. And since I live right up the street, I go to church with several of the young ladies, and you know, so I had to congratulate them publicly, of course. but they also suffered a great loss. Mr. Milton Yarborough was one of the greatest supporters of women's basketball at Fayetteville State. He passed away just over 100 years old days ago. And, you know, he was a little quiet little guy. He was one of those guys who about half his family went to Fayetteville State, including about two or three generations, because there's several of their family members there on FSU's campus now. And it was people like him who kept things going back in the day. So that's how I know that when they talk about Pearl from Frances Marion, she's a beautiful young, she was a beautiful young lady back then when she played. She still is, although we're both considerably older than us when she was playing. But the gist of it is, she and he are the kind of people that have made small college athletics in general what it is, and they continue. You know, he continued to support even when he got to the point where he couldn't go to games. They would always get him to one game or two during the year. And, you know, Mr. Wise, we used to call him, you know, we were going back and forth. But like I said, there was nobody who supported Fayetteville State athletics, and especially women's athletics, more than he did.
Well, Ashe to the ancestor, blessings. And it's nice that Fayetteville State had a righteous year. Hopefully they'll do just as well next year, if not better.
No, Winston will beat their ass next year.
Oh, shit. The gauntlet has been thrown. Shots fired, as Reggie would say.
Shots fired, as Reggie would say.
Oh, okay. Is Patrick back in the house, or is he still making that panini?
No, he's still waiting on that sandwich.
Okay, all right. So a couple updates. Well, information. So Lindsay Harding, young lady I interviewed years ago when I was writing for Hoops Addict, you know, had a great article with her. She was WNBA player, went to Duke University. She was the head coach of the Stockton Kings of the G League, and she was coach of the year as a lady, first coach of the year of the G League. And she also just recently had a Charlotte Hornets interview for their head coaching job. So well done, Lindsay, since we're talking about women's basketball. More updates. So these names, I'm going to say these names because I know these names well. George Finley, Henry Carlton, Robert Clark, Ron Hamilton, Ernie Jones, and Dick Burnett were invited to the White House last Friday to talk to Kamala Harris about the exploits of Tennessee State basketball. She invited them into the White House. Tennessee, real quick blurb to that, Tennessee State basketball legends meet with VP Kamala Harris at the White House. And the first paragraph says, six members of the 1950s Tennessee State University basketball program, along with Vice President and HBCU graduate Kamala Harris, met in the Roosevelt Room at the White House last Friday. The program was led by Basketball Hall of Fame John McLendon, who helped the program win the NAIA championship less than 5 years after black colleges were first allowed to participate in the tournament. The six men played for the 1957 Tennessee A&I program that became the first from a black college to win a national basketball challenge in the first basketball program period to win three in a row. We haven't seen no team do three in a row. Good luck UConn trying to do that next year. And so that was a high honorarium to be recognized, you know, from that particular perspective. And shortly thereafter, Mr. Dr. Richard Barnett was elected to the Naismith Hall of Fame. So again, truth to power. These championships and these survivors who represented all the legacy of the eternal efforts and accomplishments of Coach John B. McLendon, who now has more accolades. He has individual players in the Hall of Fame. His team is in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame as a contributor. He's in the Hall of Fame as a coach. No one is more decorated than any of the Hall of Fames than Coach John B. McLendon. And so, as I've said in the past, truth to power. You think people are listening when the White House invites people from that era into recognize their neighbor, yeah, and be part of that hallowed name. How many teams who have won championships in the HBCU environment have never been to the White House or honorarium? But by virtue of the accomplishment, by virtue of this push, by virtue of this continuous language, you think people are listening? No one hammers these concepts more than this station here, Soul Tree Radio, consistently. Very few can have someone who's a direct descendant, myself, of actual players who still live on that team, who can speak directly to that specificity of historical that captures the White House's attention and becomes global news. So I say it, and my best Denzel Washington from Malcolm X, I say it, and I say it again. Truth to power.
I will say it again. It is the excellence of those people that we have in our staff here that make the show what it is, because we not only say it, we did it. We did it regardless of what level, whether it's writing, playing.
You got that right.
We did it. And we
and
can't take
done.
That away.
Like and it's been done, Michael, and you set the forum for it. And like I said, what are the old saying? People, the ears are to the street, man. People know what's up. And the truth is the truth. And like I said, no one powers that like we do on a consistent basis. And if you don't think it's not hitting the ethers, it has. And all these brothers, all these legacy in their 80s, rolling up, showing them in wheelchairs, well-dressed, impeccable, sitting in the White House, speaking to their exploits 65 years later.
That's exactly right. And when I was speaking, that's a good brother who made he's rolling in the White House in the future. My brother Gary knows great.
Well, Oakland does it again. The Oakland Athletics, at the end of the 2024 season, will be going 80 miles north, Sacramento.
Absolutely. Okay. West Sacramento.
Owner John Fisher and City of Oakland did not agree on the terms. John Fisher said, okay, I'm taking my green gold toy to North Sacramento.
The Sacramento A's.
One yes, thing wrong next with 3 years. Picture. Next 3 years.
One thing wrong with this picture.
Yeah.
It's 14,000-seat stadium.
That's all it is. Oh, it's a minor league stadium. But they're only getting 3,000 now, G.
But, okay.
This is the house full.
They're only getting 3,000. They're only getting 3,000 now.
God Fisher needs to sell the team to a Oakland-based group who will keep the A's in Oakland.
Done deal, G.
It's
a wrap, G. It's a wrap.
Not signed a free agent in 3.5 years. And not signed one free agent in 3.5 years. You can't do that.
I can't wait to see the Bronx Bombers show up in that 14,000 person stadium.
Yeah. Oh yeah. How about that?
This is a complete disaster. And Major League Baseball allowed this to happen.
And you should have said it was a catastrophe, like the other guy running for president. It's a catastrophe.
Well, Graham McCoe.
Yes, sir.
1 o'clock on Saturday and 4 o'clock on Sunday. We will be doing Angela Beaufield.
Angela Beaufield. Versus Grace Jones, pull up to the bumper. Pull up to the bumper, baby. Okay, all right.
Well, you know what? I'm pleased. I'm pleased that not just that Dawn got a recognition, but the way she did it, she left no doubt. There's none of that questionable shit. It wasn't a bad call. It wasn't a questionable bullshit.
No injuries, Mike. No injuries, none of that.
Nothing. Exactly, none of that. It was a straight ass with him. You just shake
Marvin
your hands.
Marvin Frazier.
Well, you shake your hands and you move on.
Right.
Dawn did all that. And
yes,
she did it under the most trying circumstances. First, oh, she's a woman. Women don't play college basketball. Oh, she's just a girl. Well, she outcoached other girls and other men, and she got the results that was needed. And on top of everything else, you cannot argue with 109-3. They can say what they want, but 109-3 puts it all in
that's
top
gaudy.
Of context.
Those are gaudy numbers.
Isn't that better than 88-3?
You got that right. You got that right.
That's one loss per year. One loss average per year. Hello?
And
yeah,
one year that was undefeated.
Weren't they like, what, 38-1 last year or something like that? 37-1?
Yeah.
So their last 75 games, 74-1? That's nice.
Something like that.
Nice.
The long and short of it is, she brought the excellence back. There's no way people can't get on the floor, whether they bet their money, whether they just bought a ticket, or whether they were just casually watching on TV. They couldn't say, we were in the presence of greatness. Dawn Staley is the queen of college basketball. Whether they recognize her or not, she's the very best. And the very best don't have to say anything. All they have to do is point to the scoreboard, and I tell you everything that you need to know.
Keep my hair. Do you remember when I went down in the water? Take me to the water.